Shruti-vipratipannate
Yadastasyati-nishchala
Samadhavachala-buddhihi
Tadayogamavapsyasi
Shanti, shanti, shanti.
Sandhi. Shruti, shruti, vipratipanna te yada stasyati nischala samadhau achala buddhihi tada yogam avapsyati. We did this one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, let's do the next one. I thought this one was that one, and then I realized, where's the Arjuna who watching? Okay.
Arjuna uvacha
Stita prajnyasya ka bhasha
Samadhistasya
keshava
Stita dhikim prabhasheta
Stita dhikim prabhasheta
Kimasita vrajeta kim
Kimasita vrajeta kim
Arjunaha uvacha Stita prajnyasya ka bhasha Samadhistasya keshava Stita dhihi kim prabhasheta kim asita rajeta kim. So
Arjuna says, Arjuna asks a question now, because now the Sankhya has been presented and the Karma Yoga has been presented, and also in these last couple of verses now, Krishna is talking about the wise person, that having been given this knowledge, along with the Karma Yoga Buddhi, as that Karma Yoga Buddhi matures, the knowledge becomes that Jnananishta is there, or that full expression of knowledge is there. All of the doubts are freed. Remember when I said the Shvetaketu only had to hear 9 times? Well, that's because that antakarana shuddhi was there. Because it's there, yourself is so present. And when the antakarana shuddhi is there, you've lived a life of dharma. Then, when what's being pointed out, there's nothing in the antakarana really that negates that. So just, it has to be, the pramana has to be utilized. The pramana has to be used. You see right away what's being said. You have this little doubt or that little doubt. These doubts are cleared up and that's the end of it. Right? Whereas, we have a lot of, most of us, including Arjuna, you know, it wasn't 7 times for him, you know. And even at the end, you know, what happens if I get killed, you know? Well, I gained that nishtha. So now, with this backdrop, Arjuna asks a question. He wants to know, you know, what is a jnani like? What is the mind of a jnani? So let's just look at his question and I'll introduce it. So Arjuna Uvacha, he says this. Stita prajnyasya ka bhasha. What is ka bhasha? What is the bhasha? What is the description of a stita prajnyasya? So Arjuna himself uses this word, stita prajnyasya, because he's understood this from what Krishna has said. Stita prajnyasya, prajna is one who has knowledge. That is clear knowledge. Knowledge which is stitta, steady, means a knowledge which stays with you, not flickering knowledge. not knowledge which is disrupted by your antakarana, or knowledge that is by your mind, or knowledge that is disrupted by your doubts, but a sthita prajna is a person whose prajna, whose knowledge, here atmajnanam, self-knowledge, is sthita. It remains, it is steady. So Arjuna asks, what is the description? What is the nature? What are they like? What is the description? How would you describe, you know, asthita prajnasya, one whose knowledge is steady? Then he says, samadhistasya, whose knowledge is steady, and whose mind is in samadhi. That means that the mind itself is basking in me, that there's no sense of any barrier between my presence. My being fills the mind. My being, the Atma, yourself, is naturally in samadhi, right? Because it's changeless and it is itself. So even when the mind goes into samadhi, that's called samadhi. What we mean is the mind itself, if we're talking about like savikalpa, nirvikalpa, samadhi, the mind itself is just totally present to its own being. It's like the pot being totally present to the clay, where it recognizes fully in this case, it recognizes fully, the mind itself recognizes fully my nature, which is ananda, which is fullness, which is changeless, which is never objectifiable, you know, that isn't subject to time or space. The very wholeness that I am is something that the mind is totally present to, totally awake to. That doesn't mean, so when we think of this, samadhi staha, the one who remains in samadhi, means that no matter what the thought is, what the feeling is, what the emotion is, what the experience is, that buddhi is never away from my own being. In terms of its self, that my self-experience is what is dominant in the mind. You know? It's just like, you know, if you're, say, walking through beautiful nature, there's no mosquitoes, the sky is clean and clear, you know, and your mind just basks in Ishwara, actually, may not know it, may not say that, but actually it's just basking in Ishwara because you're just so present to the creation as it is. You know, you're not asking it to be different, you're just holding it in awe as it is. And so even though you're having lots of experiences, you're looking here and you're looking there and you're thinking this and you're thinking that, none of those experiences in any way cover my being. My being as I am still fills the mind without any competition from the mind in terms of its nature. What I mean by without any competition, even now, for an ajnani or somebody who's having, you know, different situations, my mind, let me put it this way. Even if my mind is having problems, say I'm an ajnani, my mind is having whatever problems are there, still, whatever the problems are, or whatever the shantavrittis are, right, those problems never cover my presence in the sense of this me. I am always the one there present to whatever experiences I'm having. It's not like, oh, I'm having this experience and I'm lost. Like the me is covered over. It is never covered over at any time. They're two different orders of reality. And so whatever the movie is, so to speak, right? Whatever the movie is, the one who's the witness of the movie doesn't get lost in the movie. And so your sense of self, your being, is very much present no matter what's going on in the movie or what vrittis are going on, you know? But the thing is that my own presence in reference to the vritti is in competition, in a sense, with the affect in the vritti. There's no competition at all in terms of being. The being that I am is the being that the vritti enjoys, existence. The vritti exists, it is, I am, it is. And you say, I am, it am, right? Because the am that the isness that is it enjoys is my own amness. No competition, because even the most dire thought is. It is there, right? It is. But the most dire thought means the saddest thought or the most hurt thought, it carries an affect, or we won't use the word hurt or happy. These are emotional states. Hurt, happy, anxious, compassionate. There's the positive spectrum and the negative spectrum. This spectrum, this continuum, right, is a continuum of affect. On the positive side of the continuum, what we call positive, those affects are expressions of myself, like love, compassion, care, sympathy, joy, you know, wholeness. These are all expressions of myself. They're expressions of ananda, which are kind of variegated depending upon the situation that I find myself in. But the negative spectrum of emotions don't resonate with me. And you can know that, well, I'll tell you one way to know that is we want to transform those. Those emotions, we don't want to live with them. We want them to go away. We try to deflect them. We try to, distract ourselves from them, do something to make them go away. Or if I have knowledge or I have psychological knowledge, I have tools to try to transform them so that they don't have to be there. This negative spectrum is not really wanted. We can want them only as sadhana, because since they're there, there's something that I need to work on, and so let me welcome that so that I can transform it. You know, that's why I welcome them. And the welcoming itself, you're not pushing it away. You're beginning that process of transforming. When you're dialoguing with it, talking to it, being with it, playing with it, you know, bringing a little child, that's all transforming. That's all healing. So this negative spectrum is what we want to heal. But the negative spectrum as well as the positive spectrum, it is, there's no question, there's no competition there. My being, the amness, you know, is enjoyed as isness in reference to the entire spectrum. The sat-chit, consciousness, my being, the conscious being, the self-evident being, is not in any type of competition, because the entire spectrum of emotions are known. This is known, this is known, this happy one is known, this sad one is known. It's not like the happy emotions, you know, that really resonate with me are more known than these. In fact, these unhappy ones, I spend more time with. You know, because I circle around trying to figure out a way how to get rid of them, basically. The other ones I just bask in. These I want to transform and think about, and why do I have this, and who caused this, and I'll build webs around this negative spectrum. But whatever webs I build, they are known, equally known. Equally, so the sat-chit, no problem. But then in terms of experience, I mean, there's a problem in terms of, there's a difference in terms of the sat-chit and my experiences, that the experiences come and go, the sat-chit doesn't come and go. But these experiences take place in the sat-chit, and sat-chit conscious being just remains as it is. But the ananda factor is amplified, in a sense. The ananda is amplified, or is something, is a factor which resonates or is reflected in the positive states. And so I feel so happy with them. You know, I love these positive states. I wouldn't love something called compassion if it didn't resonate with me. That would go over to the negative side. These words that I have, compassion, love, sympathy, they resonate with me, right? As myself. I feel like myself. I like myself when this side of the spectrum is there. And the negative side of the spectrum is there, I don't resonate with myself that way. So here, when we say samadhau, when we say this up above, this is samadhistha, the one whose buddhi, the buddhi, is something which is abiding in staha. It's abiding and staying in myself. It is never in competition with me. I am the one who is predominant. I feel it. That's the antakarna shuddhi. There can be all kinds of thoughts and all kinds of things going on, but if I have that prasada buddhi, then all of the experiences that are coming my way, are coming into a mind which is welcoming, which welcomes it as Bhagawan. And so that prasada buddhi being there as for a karma yogi as continuous, for the karma yogi, I get to have that prasada buddhi, but which allows for my ananda or my wholeness not to be shaken. Then that prasada buddhi, as it becomes mature and clear, then my own self, my own being, then becomes available as what we call, instead of relative, that relative shanti and absolute shanti. So the relative shanti discovers the absolute shanti of myself. And now the absolute shanti of myself is present to whatever vritti is there. There's no competition. Honestly, for jnani, the samadhistha, if there's this thought passing through or this thought, mosquitoes here and there, whatever it is, it still does not disrupt my being, because my buddhi has recognized me, and so my being as I am is always present, always something that the buddhi is basking in, no matter what the vritti is there. So when we say samadhistaha, that means continually, always, abiding in samadhi means in that samatva buddhi, but in the samatva buddhi which resolves into the atma. So samadhi here is the one that, the atma that receives all of the vrittis. But for the jnani, it receives the jnani, all of those vrittis resolve into the known atma, not just into the conscious being that you've thought to belong to the buddhi. It resolves into the conscious being, the Satchidananda Atma, which is me. And that it cannot not do. It cannot not do it. Because already that jnana-nishtha, that clarity is there. A different buddhi that is a jnani, it has completely differentiated the mityatva of the mityatva nature of the buddhi and all experience from me. Once it identifies that mityatva, once it has nishta in that area, then all experiences, in fact, in the creation, and certainly all experiences that I experience in my mind, that it's mitya means that it can't be away from me. For mitya means it depends totally on me for its being. Just like the clay, the pot is mitya because it has clay. It depends on the clay. If it didn't depend on the clay, if it had some independent being, it wouldn't be mitya, it'd be satyam. But when it depends totally on me, in this case, when it depends totally on me, then it becomes mitya, because I am what is actually there filling it. There is no space between a rupa, between a form and its content. And so this is the form, my buddhi, whatever forms are there, have only myself for its content, and the buddhi is able to differentiate my own being from it. So it says... So here Arjuna says, he understands this because Krishna has made this so clear by first unfolding this vision and then sitting in that karma yoga. So these two, when they go together, give you this jnana-nishtha. When the antakarna shuddhi becomes clear, you find that you're just reveling in your knowledge. Your mind is basically free from raga-dvesha, so see. So Arjuna asks, this Hey Keshava, that's a word name for Bhagavan, for Krishna. Just can you describe, tell me a description, what is a description of this sthita prajnasya? who Siddha Pragya, who always has, you know, whose knowledge is always clear, free from doubt, and that Karma Yoga Buddhi, that one, and that, and whose mind is always in samadhi, means never not recognizing myself. In fact, when we do this meditation, which I really love this particular little way of saying it, you know, first let your buddhi just gently focus on you. I say gently focus, because you don't have to stop these experiences, other vrittis. That's not the point. Well, focus, you know, as though the whole world has to go away, or all your thoughts, all your feelings have to go away. No. Just gently focus. Let them be. Just let them be. The self is changeless in spite of the mithya vrittis. Nothing happens to it. So, in any given vritti, any given thought modification, your presence is fully there like the clay, and the vritti and its content is there. You know? And because you are there, in any given vritti, like right now, you are here, and your perception is here. Perception is an antakarana vritti. The me is here, the perception is here. Now right now, without negating the perception at all, you know, I can be me. So when we say in this meditation, first of all, often I say, just gently focus on your own presence, on your being. And then, be yourself. Right? It's just the slightest little shift. Focus on your own being, that being is you. Be you. Be yourself. You know? And being yourself now, because you are the one, because of whom all these vrittis are known, being yourself, let all these vrittis come and go. But that self-evident nature, you've just, you know, you've shifted the aham from the ahankara, from landing on the body, mind, sense organs, buddhi, etc. You've just shifted it to you. You say, be yourself, then the I is with me. So when I say, let the buddhi focus on you, you're still as though some subject-object there, you know. But then when I say, now be, recognize that me as your being. And then there's you, and then there's the mithya buddhi, and mithya vrittis. It's very, very beautiful, just so subtle. So here, that samadhistasya, the samad, that one who is always, means whose buddhi is always there, you know, abiding in myself, awake to myself, you can say. Yeah? Samadhistasya keshava. Then he goes like this. So this stitadihi, you know, in other words, stitadihi, the one whose buddhi is steady, that one who has knowledge, free from doubt, and that karma yoga, that prasada buddhi, that steadiness, you know, has resolved, has become awake to an absolute steady, the absolute steadiness of my own being. It itself is steady because that prasada buddhi. And now that prasada buddhi recognizes the changelessness of my being, so it is stittadihi. Itself is steady because it has found the treasure at the end of the rainbow. It's found that. What I'm always looking for, I'm looking for it always in my relationships, in my children, in my acquisitions, in my friendships. There's no time when that ananda is not what I'm searching for, unless I am it. If I'm it, then I'm no longer searching for it. But when I'm no longer searching for it, and I am that, then I have nothing to search for. See, I'm not searching for it. The raga dveshas are mithya, they're irrelevant, as we'll see. The raga dveshas are irrelevant because what I was trying to find from all of these things, I am. And that amness that I am is not something that can change. It's not like, it's only here right now, you know, which is the little experiences we have throughout life when all of a sudden you just are how you're supposed to be, how you know you are. And I mean, hold on, now it's going, here you go. That's our experience. But when you know yourself, that self can't go away. It can never change. It can never move. It's impossible. It's not an object in the world. So I just simply am. So my buddhi, and I am that ananda, what did I say? So my buddhi when it recognizes that, when it discovers it, it has nowhere it wants to go. It's home. It's where it has always wanted to be. So loving being home, finally, then it is present to Ishvara. Just like in the Prasada Buddhi, really? You're present to Bhagavan. Everything in Prasada Buddhi, when you're a mumukshu and gaining this knowledge, that's why I say it's just a hair's breadth. You're getting this knowledge, you have that Prasada Buddhi, then everything, all my actions are an offering to Bhagavan. This is what's here to be done now, let me do that. This is what's here to be done now, let me do that. Sometimes I talk about Albert like that. Some friends that have told me, somebody is always serving Swamiji, Swamiji wants this, I'm here, Swamiji wants this. That's what we want, that toward Ishvara. Bhagavan wants this situation, let me do that. The situation, let me do that. That's what I'm doing. That's what Bhagavan's giving me to do. That's what I'm doing. Om Tat Sat. And then whatever Bhagavan does, fine, this Prasada Buddhi. That gives that Shantavritti, which is the Shantavritti of a Jnani. The difference is the Shantavritti of a Jnani, it's myself, I have a Shantavritti, that's my experience when I have the Prasada Buddhi. So that Shantavritti is dependent on my Prasada Buddhi. The Shantavritti of a Jnani is not dependent on anything because I am the Shanti which that Vritti enjoys. So even if there is agitation or whatnot in the Vritti, there's some agitation in the Vritti, that Vritti or that rippling of the ocean, the little ripples on top of the ocean, those exist, right, in what is the absolute shanti of myself. So the absolute shanti of myself fills that vritti. The ripples don't make any difference. Sometimes we use the example as, say, the ocean is having these waves and ripples and all of these things going on, but you go down 20 feet, and all of those things are taking place, but they don't touch the shanti of my being. And so that's this stittadehi. So stittadehi kim prabhasheta. So he says this stittadehi, this, now he's really described this wise person. So this stittadehi kim prabhasheta. How does he talk? Kim asita. How does he sit? Kim can be used as what, as how, or why, or what. It depends on the context. So kim prabhasheta, how does that jnani, that wise person that has that jnananishta, how does he sit asita? How does he move about? How does he run? How does he move about? And so now, how is Krishna going to receive that question? He's going to receive it in the way that Arjuna meant it. Because say if he says, he talks very slowly. He never raises his voice. And he always sits in Padmasana. And he can hold that position for hours on end. I'm actually saying that because Swamiji had this beautiful asana, where he could sit. He would have this. His knees were, his legs were like jello. They could just do whatever, So it's kind of interesting for an Indian body are often like that. They just have a natural limberness. And for most of us in the West, we really have to work for that for a long time. But anyway, I can't really do it, but he would just pull his leg up like this. And these two legs would just be totally flopped down, on the surface. Absolutely no tension, like mine is trying to, And he could hold that for hours. He would just sit that way, an absolute relaxation. So then maybe Krishna would say, they can hold this Padmasana for hours all day if they want to. That's typical for jnani, and they talk very low, And when they walk, they glide.
Swamiji says, you know, Krishna can't say anything like that because he could never believe it. He could never believe that, you know. But then Swamiji also said, you know, people have notions like that, you know. Like maybe they barely touch the surface of, you know, as they're walking or, you know. Maybe they have some magical kind of presence or some sort of what we call guna. Gunas are qualities that any, in, you know, like how they, the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they move their head, the way they, their voice floats through the air beautifully. Maybe these are some qualities that will identify, you know, jnani. There's no such thing. And also, so Krishna is really asking, he's not directly answering the words of Arjuna's question, but he's answering the spirit of it, you know. The spirit would be, what is the difference? What is the difference? Like in the way a jnani sees the world or responds to the world, what is the difference in terms of their internal experience, you know? Must be different. There has to be some difference between, you know, a wise person and a samsari. Somebody who's enlightened, somebody who has these big words, jnana nishtha, ajivan mukta, you know, living liberated, all of these questions. Like, what if we had these words and in the end, you know, Arjuna asks this to Krishna and he says, you know what, really there's no difference at all. Way you think is the way I think. Way you suffer is the way I suffer, you know. It's all just a farce. We're learning about an imaginary being that doesn't exist, right? But that's not true, and that's not what Arjuna is asking, because he can already tell that there's a difference, but he wants to have Krishna just describe it, what it is. And Krishna does. He describes it, and also in the description of the gunas or the qualities of a wise person, he is also describing this, what is your sadhana. So what are natural expressions and values for the wise person is the sadhana for the mumukshu. Like for, and in the Shankar says exactly this in the commentary. So in his bhasha. So it would be like, say, for a wise person, the emotional expression that is there for a wise person is an emotional expression that is in harmony with your being. And so that emotional expression is really on the positive spectrum of emotions, because the positive spectrum of emotions resonate with you. They're a natural expression of you. When that positive expression is thwarted, that's because there's a problem. In some way I've been hurt, or some way I've been disappointed, or something has happened to throw my mind off into that negative spectrum. But the positive spectrum is really an expression of who I am, and for somebody who's has that jnana nishtha, and who is just with me, whose mind is, whose buddhi is really an expression of myself, then the natural expressions of love and sympathy and compassion and caring and wanting to help, this is who we are when we're not having a problem. This is what is natural to us. What's not natural, the problems, the negative spectrum, are the things that we're trying to transform or trying to get rid of. So you see, when those positive expressions like love and compassion, sympathy, the natural expressions are lacking in us, they become a sadhana. The lack becomes a sadhana because there's something that I'm at odds with internally. And that's why we need to be able to recognize them and do this type of work. And so, so Shankara says so clearly, and Swamiji also writes about a lot about this, he's talked about it also, it's so beautiful to, as we go through these next 15 verses or so many of them are left in this chapter, everything that you can recognize in yourself, everything that is being said,
It's just not that stitadihi. It's not there achala, always there. Achala means it's never changing. It is just your expression. It's never really changing because yourself isn't changing. So things that come out of an expression of yourself, if the buddhi is resting in you, your mind has had a chance to work through all of its issues, then that mind that is resting in you, you know, is expressing itself in your voice, as your voice. It's kind of a nice way to think of it. Your mind, even your mind, is an expression of yourself. Your voice is an expression of yourself. Your actions are an expression of yourself, as opposed to being an expression of an emotion or feeling or anger or agitation or sadness, whatever it may be, that is overwhelming your mind. Then, when it's overwhelming, these emotions are overwhelming the buddhi, you're identified with the emotion, it's for all your experiences that I am that, right? And so then all of your actions and your words and whatnot can be an expression of that emotion. Unless, with all of our inner child work and learning how to work with our emotions, we know how to objectify them, right? And then pull them back to myself and do that inner work. But otherwise, they're just, whatever I say, whatever, walking around so angry, stomping around and voice having that real edge to it, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. We all know, and we all have our own way, you know, of expressing that type of anger or frustration. That means that my buddhi, right, is acting out of the emotion, you know. But what if my buddhi is not acting out of the emotion? It's acting out of myself, out of my own being, you know. Then those are my natural emotion, my natural expressions. And of course, because of that, I feel very comfortable with them. I feel happy, you know. When these are the emotions that are dominant, I feel beautiful and happy, you know, and full and complete, because that's what yourself is. And so when you're when your mind is an expression of that, you feel in harmony, you know. And other people like it too, right? Other people love it, in fact, because they feel loved and seen. It's a beautiful thing. So, Bhagavan accepts the question, he understands the question, and as Swamiji says, he answers Arjuna, the person. He knows Arjuna very well. He knows what Arjuna means. He knows what Arjuna really wants to know. And that's what he answers. So let's do this first verse 55.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Prajahati yada kaman.
Prajahati yada kaman.
Sarvan partha manogata.
Sarvan partha manogata.
Atman
yevatmana tushtaha.
Stita prajnyastadochyate.
Stita prajnyastadochyate.
So Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagavan says, Prajahati sandhi, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Atmani eva atmana tushtaha stitta pragnyaha tada uchate. So in Arjuna's question, the first one is, how do people describe a stitta pragnya? Right? How do people describe somebody whose knowledge is firm, unwavering, steady? So now Krishna takes that first word, stitta pragnya, and he's going to tell what that is. So he says, there's a yada tada here, by the way. You see the yada? Mm-hmm. Second word on the top line. Yada means when. Tada means then. So the tada is the next to the last word in the bottom line. Tada uchate, right? So stitta prajñaha tada uchate. So when, blah, 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 then. So the then just then, so stitta prajñaha tada uchate. At the very end he says, then he is called uchate, a stitta prajñaha. Right? Then he is called a stitta prajñaha, one whose knowledge is steady. When is that? When yada prajahati, when he abandons, gives up, lets go of kaman sarvan, all desires, sarvan, all, accusative plural here, kaman sarvan, all desires, he parta, right, vocative, all desires, manogatan, as they come into the mind, right? Gata means they're entering in. They're taking when the mind is taking that state. So you'd say manogatan as they go into the mind. As these desires come into the mind, he lets them go. Letting them go, that person. So the tada hasn't come yet. This is important. So he says, atmani eva atmana tushtaha. Tushtaha is to be set. Tush is the verb. To be satisfied. Tushtaha is a past passive participle. What do you call that in Sanskrit? I have to learn all the Sanskrit terms for these people who have learned the terms all in Sanskrit. For me, it's a PPP, past passive participle. Okay. Ikta. There's a word, and it doesn't matter. Okay, so tushtaha is past passive participle, means the one who is satisfied. He is atmani eva atmana tushtaha. That person, that stittadihi, stittapragnaha, is one who, being satisfied, he is satisfied by the atma, by the self, in the atma alone. So my satisfaction is brought about by myself, in myself. So I'm in myself, my mind is abiding in me and is completely satisfied by the nature of myself, because myself is ananda. Eva means alone, you know, or indeed. Eva has two meanings. It's the indeclinable, alone or indeed. So he would say probably here, how does Swamiji say it? Well, alone, see, happy in oneself, with oneself, alone. So the instrumental can be with, it could be with also, that's nice, or by. So the tushtaha, you know, I am happy in myself, being with myself or by means of myself. By means of myself means that myself is the source of the ananda. So I am satisfied being atmani in myself, by myself, by means of myself, or with myself. The spirit, the idea of that is that the atma is the very source of ananda, and I am in that ananda. So there is nowhere to go, you know, to become happy. So I'm already that. The very ananda that I used to try to seek, that fullness or that sense of being all is well with me, that alam buddhi means this, it's enough. I have everything that I want. That is my nature. And so when I've discovered that, free and clear, pure, something which is not subject to coming and going, my mind discovers that, I like to be there. Okay. So he says, then, as desires may arise in the mind, as they arise in the mind, I let them go because I don't need them. It's like going to the well when I'm sitting in the floodwaters. I'm sitting here in the floodwaters, and you know, I decide that I need some water, and so I get up and I put my boots on or whatever, and I trek out to the middle of the floodwater to get the water for a well that has totally been subsumed or, you know, overwhelmed by the flood. And so here I'm with myself, and some desires rise in the mind. You know, I'm sitting here in ananda, just being my own being, and a desire rises in the mind, and I just let it go because I don't have any reason to go after it. There's no reason. So now, to understand this, though, what type of desires are we talking about? So we say, you know, there's two types of desires. There's the what Swamiji always calls binding desires and non-binding desires. Non-binding desires are like Dagda Bija, they're like burned seeds. So binding desires, non-binding desires. So if a non-binding desire is there, we actually, we're not talking about those. Non-binding desires, if it works out, that's wonderful. If it doesn't work out, it's fine. Nothing happens. Nothing happens to me. For a non-binding desire, the desire template isn't in operation. The desire template is, I need this in order to be happy. That is a binding desire. And in samsara, that's what we think of as a desire. We have other words for that, like a preference. If I get this, it's fine. And if I don't, it's fine too. Preference means it's only a preference. It doesn't disturb me if it isn't fulfilled in the way I want it to be fulfilled. So that's what we call a non-binding desire. The desire can rise up and I can act on it or not act on it. Okay? Binding desire is no. I need this. My ananda is at stake here. I want this so I can be happy. And negative. I don't want this. The dvesha is I don't want this so that I can be happy. Right? The raga is I want this so that I can be happy. What makes it a binding desire is the this and the happiness are equated. The ananda is superimposed on the this. I want this. Why? Because I want to be happy, and this is the source of that happiness. That's the binding desire, right? Preferences, I want this. If I don't get it, it's fine. My ananda is not at stake. So here, when we're talking about raga dvesha, we're talking about the raga dvesha template, where my ananda is necessary. It's necessary for me to have that in order to be happy. That's what we mean. That's a real desire, you know. And so those are the ones we're concerned about. But what if you think that you have to get rid of the desires that come into your mind? What are you going to do? What would Krishna do? You know, what would Swamiji, who was doing all of the time, he was one of the busiest persons I've ever met in my life, from early morning all of the way into when he would go to bed. He had scores of people that he was talking to. He was running the Aim for Seva and running the course and running this Swami Brahma Prakash Ananda's ashram in Nagpur. It went on and on and on and on. And he just sat there doing these things, you know. Now, what if there was no impetus at all? Somebody said, Swamiji, could you do that? Could you do this for me? You know, would you help me with this? He goes, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to, you know. Or why don't we do this? Like an example, let's start, you know, an Ayurvedic garden. That is Swamiji. Let's start an Ayurvedic garden where we can grow all of the plants and herbs that are in short supply. And so that's, everybody's, okay, Swamiji. And then he appointed, let's let Ramanji do that, you know. So he made sure we knew where to put it. He put Ramanji in charge. And then he developed this beautiful, you know, garden. Because he wanted it. Swamiji wanted to have that. That's a desire. I want to have that Ayurvedic garden, you know. But that's a non-binding desire, because if it didn't work out, it would be fine. You know, I give you another example. You know, Swamiji was running this course in Salisburg, you know, and he had a vritti for it, fine. He was happy, I will do that. Just for 3 years, and then maybe in another and another, that course, the ashram is still there, it's still flourishing. But, you know, money was always in very short supply, like maybe 1 or 2 days. Enough to pay the bills for 1 or 2 days, you know. But, you know, Swamiji never bothered about it. He didn't have any. He said that it just the money will come. You just be patient. The money will come. Don't worry about it. We're doing a good work, you know. And then he used to get pressured by people who were running it in this way or another and spending a lot of money on construction. And the board was thinking, you know, we're going ahead and moving and building these things and doing all the things. There's not enough money, Swamiji. We don't have enough money. And Swamiji, you know, we're just, you know, just the money will come. We're doing a good work. And they were pressuring, and he said, if the money doesn't come, I'm just going to go to Rishikesh. I'll just go to Rishikesh, you know. And everybody all of a sudden changed their tune, you know. But actually, Swamiji said it with firmness when he said that, and everybody went, because they were pressuring, just, but what he said was the truth. If Bhagavan doesn't want this, you know, and no money comes to support it, and it crumbles, then what? And, you know, we'll close it up, I'll go to the Rishikesh, everything is fine, you know. This Ananda, there's not anything. I just experienced that with him for, you know, the 40 or 50 years, that 45 years or whatever, that I knew him. There's, you do so many things, you have so many ideas, beautiful ideas, and if they flower, that is fine. And if they don't, that's also fine. That's not Ishwara's Icha. It was just an idea. It didn't take place. So it doesn't make any difference at all. That's that type of desire. If you look at all that Krishna did, he taught Ishwara the whole. He taught Arjuna the whole Bhagavad Gita. And he was really excited to teach it. Like when Arjuna asked him, he was so excited and he went right into it. And he didn't stop for 2 or 3 hours. He just told him the whole thing, answered all of his questions. No, I don't feel like it. Those are, you have so many desires that guide your every action or you can't move. But your ananda is not at stake. That is the difference. We're not talking about those kind of desires. Those desires are pure. They're your prarabdha karma. They are preferences. They don't. There's no ajnanam there. You have this body, you have free will, you have your prarabdha karma, you do what is there to be done. You know, ideas come, you try that. If it doesn't work out, it's fine. You put your effort into it, the answer is no, that's fine, because I don't need to have, I don't need, my ananda, my being does not need to be supported by these accomplishments or these, the fulfillment of these desires. There's no need for it. And so then I just do it out of fullness. I live my prarabdha out of fullness. It's a big difference. It's a non-binding desire. A binding desire is, say, I'm sitting there, you know, enjoying my own ananda, just being with myself, everything is fine, and some desire comes up, you know, let me have that, as though that would be some kind of improvement, or wouldn't that be good? I would like to have that. And you just let it go. If there's any catch, there's a catch, then it's kind of like, what is that? You let it go. Because binding desires are a real hassle. Do you discover it more and more? If a binding desire comes, the world kind of divides up into the people that will help me to get that, and the people who don't want me to have it, or the obstacles. I feel some stress around it, you know, and then I have to take actions to make that happen, because my happiness is dependent on it. And so all of a sudden a lot of stress is coming into the mind, and also projections and all kinds of things are generated out of that, because they're generated out of the ajnanam. For a jnani, if that type of binding desire still comes, you're the first one to let it go. It's almost like, no, I'm not going to go there. Not going there. I love my ananda and my fullness too much to get my mind entangled in a binding desire. Non-binding desire is fun, nice, beautiful. Binding desire is painful. Non-binding desire takes place in my knowledge, in myself, without a ripple. Binding desire creates ripple after ripple after ripple and is dependent upon its fulfillment. As we'll see later when Shankara is talking about it, if it is not fulfilled, that is the beginning of anger and disillusionment and sorrow. So he'll give a whole little list of what takes place when that happens. So he says, so Krishna here says, what is asthita prajñaha? He says, when, you know, A person is called astitta-pragna when all of those binding desires, as they rise in the mind, prajahati, you let go of them. You don't go there. You don't want to go there. You don't want all the problems it caused. You let go of them. Sitting, or while sitting, tushtaha, satisfied in myself, with myself, by myself. When that's my situation, then that person is a tattapragna. That's it. Om Tat Sat.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo.